Hi, my name is Abraham. I can tell from the looks on your faces that you recognize my name. I'm not surprised. After all, I'm considered to be the patriarch, the father, so to speak, of the Jews. In fact, not only the Jews, but also the Muslims and Christians considered me to be their founding patriarch. I have been told that you just completed a long look at my history, as well as the history of my grandson Jacob and my great-grandson Joseph. We were asked to come today and tell you our story. So sit back and let me take you on the wild adventure of life that God led us on. An adventure that involved risk, faith, trials, and danger, but one in which the goodness of God was constantly on display. My story starts in Ur. Come on, you know, Ur, of the Chaldees. Okay, let me think. You 21st century types aren't great at geography anymore, really. Yes, with your googly maps, you can use that to direct you. See, geography, I understand it's a foreign concept to you, so let's just say that my family is from southern Iraq, but at some point, my dad moved us up into Syria. If you don't know where that is, well, you'll just have to googly it. Well, anyway, I was living happily in Haran, minding my own business, when God spoke to me and said that he was going to bless the whole world through me. I mean, who am I and why pick me? He also told me he would bless me and make my name great. Then he told me to go to the land of Canaan. Canaan. Why would I want to go there? That would involve a long journey and we would be leaving the comforts of a nice metro area with the gorgeous suburbs and go to redneck country. Nobody lived in Canaan but Canaanites. But when God speaks, I listen, and when God promises to bless, I take that as a sign that God intends this for good. So I took my wife and my nephew and his wife, and we began our journey. When we arrived in Canaan, the Lord promised to give the land to my ancestors. That is why it's called the Promised Land. Well, let me tell you, it wasn't very promising to start. Right away, we ran into famine and drought. Thanks, God. So we went down to Egypt to ride out the famine, but I noticed the men there started giving my wife, Sarah, some looks. Okay, let me tell you, Sarah, my wife, is hot. I got totally lucky. I know it's shallow of me, but she is a real looker. So anyway, I got jealous when they were giving her these looks, and I got scared. After all, the Egyptians were powerful, and if they found out that she was my wife, they might kill me to have her. I told her that to say that she was my sister, which wouldn't technically be lying because she's really my half-sister. Well, it didn't take long for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to take her into his harem. He gave me lots of gold and presents in exchange, which was nice, but then his house was afflicted with plagues, which wasn't so nice. Boy, was Pharaoh mad. He called me in and he said, why didn't you say she was your wife? Because you would have killed me, I said. Here she is now, go, Pharaoh said. So we left Egypt and went back to the Promised Land. A few years later, God came to me in a vision and said that I didn't have anything to fear and that my reward would be great. I was glad he didn't tell me to move again. I pointed out that I was getting on in years and that I had no children. What could God promise me or give me that would last beyond my own life? Then God stunned me by saying that I would have my very own son. And then stunned me further by saying that my offspring would be greater than the stars in the sky. After the vision, I peeked at the night sky. Wow, that is a lot of offspring. I felt really bad for Sarah. Well, Sarah and I got busy helping God keep his promise. But no children, no offspring were forthcoming. After a few years, Sarah suggested that I take her maidservant as a concubine and have a son that way. Talk about an awkward conversation. But maybe then God would begin this process of blessing us through children. Well, like an idiot, I listened to her. Normally, my wife has good advice, but I should have known better. Sure enough, the concubine, her name is Hagar, she got pregnant. Pretty soon, she's strutting around camp, sticking her swollen belly out for everyone to see, and basically looking down her nose at Sarah. Well, that didn't go well, as you can imagine. Sarah started to beat her, and Hagar ran off into the desert with my promised blessing. Then a few days later, Hagar came back into camp. She told us that the Lord had visited her and told her to return. When I was 86, she bore the child she was carrying. It was a son we named Ishmael. Finally, I could get down to the business of having more offspring. But Sarah continued to be barren, and no further relations with Hagar were happening. When I was 99, 13 years later, God appeared to me again. He said he would bless me, cause me to multiply, make me exceedingly fruitful, and make me the father of many nations, and that kings would be my descendants. Then he said something really crazy. He said that my wife Sarah, who had just turned 90, would bear a son of her own. I fell on my face and laughed to myself. God did know that I was almost 100, right? He knew that Sarah was 90, right? He knew that the way of women had ceased with her many years before that, right? We were too old for new children. If he wanted us to have many offspring, he should have started 70 years ago. I suggested that the Lord use Ishmael instead. He said, no. He would bless Ishmael, but Isaac, the son of Sarah, would be the son of promise, and God would make his covenant with him. Sure enough, a little less than a year later, the cries of a newborn babe echoed through the night as Isaac was born. After several years, the Lord called to me again. He said, I should take my son, my only son, the son I love, and sacrifice him. I was confused. Take my son and sacrifice him. Wasn't this the son of promise? Wasn't this the son God would make his covenant with? Wasn't this the only son left since I had to send Ishmael off? What are we starting over? Sarah is now well over 100. But I obeyed. If I have learned anything, it is that God had plans in motion I knew nothing about, and that God intends everything for the good, even when it seems bad. I took Isaac and some servants and loaded up the donkeys and went to the mountain of sacrifice, Moriah. Moriah, the mountain of sacrifice. It was a 3-day journey, and I can tell you that it was the most miserable 3 days of my life. Every step through the hot desert sun was agony. I kept my eyes on Isaac's face, drenching in every aspect of his features, never wanting to forget, drilling them into my brain. When we got to the base of the mountain, I told the servants to wait for us, and Isaac and I would journey the rest of the way alone. I put the wood for the fire in Isaac's arms, and I myself carried the fire and the knife. As we slowly ascended the slopes of the mountain, Isaac, as the son of promise, he's no slouch, he quickly asked the obvious question. Dad, I see the fire and the knife, but where is the lamb? You know, the one for the burnt offering. Well, I'm glad he didn't ask me that earlier in the trip. Not wanting to scare the boy, I mysteriously replied that God will provide. Well, when we got to the top, we assembled the altar. We put the big rocks in place and then laid the wood around it for the fire. Once everything was set, I gritted my teeth and I forced myself to bound Isaac with heavy ropes. And I lifted him onto the altar. Of course, I was dragging my feet the whole time. I kept waiting for God to do something, to tell me to stop, anything, to say something like, hey, look at those beautiful goats over there. But no, silence was the answer. So I continued with the sacrifice. I reached down, I took the sacrificial knife, a cleaver, and I reached out to cut Isaac's throat with it, when suddenly the sweetest sound of my life came. Abraham, I froze. Here I am, I responded. Do not do anything to the boy. Okay. For now I know that you fear God, the voice said, since you haven't withheld your son, your only son, from me. Suddenly I noticed a ram caught in the thicket and thought to myself, where did that come from? I took the ram and offered it as a burnt offering to the Lord. Isaac and I walked slowly off the mountain as I explained to him the test of God. That was a tough conversation, but he understood that God was testing my soul. The deepest tests reveal the truest character. And at my core, I am a man that fears and follows the Lord.
My name's Jacob. I hope you enjoyed my grandpa's story. He had a wild life, let me tell you. His story is so much different than my story, actually. In fact, where God comes to him and tells him to leave, to go to the promised land, God comes to me, or through a series of events, I should say, I'm actually told to leave the promised land to go back to where he came from. Yeah, it's really crazy. Now, God didn't tell me, actually, I kind of was sent back there by my folks. Well, I mean, it goes back further than that. It goes back to my childhood. See, I'm a twin. I've got an older brother. You probably heard of him. You ever hear of Esau? Esau, big Esau, hairy Esau. I mean, this guy is so big, so hairy. He makes Sasquatch look like Pat DeReamer. Just one hairy guy, and it's just crazy. You know, he's a fierce warrior. He's always after the next game, next hunting trip. In fact, some people said he was kind of like one tool short in the shed, you know, up here, you know. Never bathed that much. And yet, I had to leave because of Esau, because he wanted to kill me. Yeah, kill me. That's what I said, yeah. It all came about over a bowl of stew. But it really goes back to my dad. My dad played favorites, and he never loved me. I never felt love for my dad, but he loved Esau. He loved Esau. Esau could do no wrong. Me, I could do everything right, and he never noticed. I mean, never did he encourage me. In fact, I actually ran the family business. I was the one who stayed home. I'm the one who took care of the flocks and the herds while Dad and Esau were out hunting and having fun together. I was the one making our enterprise, our family business, successful and wealthier, and yet Dad never encouraged me. It was always about Esau, Esau, Esau. Esau was the great hunter, you see. So on a regular occasion, you hear Dad say, "Hey, Esau, remember that goat you killed the other day? That was awesome." Or, "Esau, how many doves did you kill last month for the family table?" Or, "Esau, tell everybody how great a shot you are with your bow and arrow, how many targets you hit last month." And it's me, it's like, Jacob who? I should have been the firstborn. Came right out in front of me. I was holding on to his heel. I should have been the firstborn because all that he cared about was himself. Now, I can understand that because my dad, Isaac, he was a favored, pampered son of his parents, my grandparents. He was the one they all loved and doted on. And he would be what you would call today, maybe in modern day, your vernacular, a snowflake, kind of a snowflake kid, privileged, got everything handed to him. In turn, he turns around and does that to Esau. And that only encouraged Esau's self-absorption and self-focus. And so all that Esau cared about was fun and hunting and himself. He didn't act like a firstborn. The firstborn is supposed to care about the family first and the herds and the flocks. That's me. That's me. I should have been the firstborn and to inherit the family leadership and to inherit the authority from my father. But it was going to go to Esau. But one day, the opportunity came my way to flip that on its head. One day, I was at home making this delicious stew and baking this delicious bread. And he comes in from his hunting and says, "I'm famished. I'm hungry. Give me some of that." And I thought, give you some of that. You really want this? Oh, yeah, I'm going to die if you don't give this to me. And right then, it came to me. I have something finally that he desperately wants. I can trade him for what I desperately want from him. And so I said, "Listen, I'll sell it to you. I'll sell this to you for your birthright. I'll give you this." Oh, smell it. It's so good. "Are you hungry?" "Yes, give it to him. I'm going to die." "Okay, first promise me the birthright, and then it's yours." "Deal," he says. "The best deal, the best bargain ever achieved." I had it, man. I got the birthright. Well, a few years later, Dad's getting old. He can't see very well. So he calls in Esau and says, "Hey, I want you to go hunt me up some good food. You prepare a really delicious dish like you know we like to enjoy when we're out on hunting trips. Bring it into me. We'll share this meal together, and I'll pass on the family blessing to you." Well, Mom was listening, and Mom wanted me to get the family blessing since I already had the birthright, right? Because those usually go hand in hand in our culture. And so she says, "Hey, listen, we're going to take the blessing from Esau and give it to you." I said, "How's that going to happen?" She says, "You're going to pretend to be your brother." "What?" "Yeah, he's out hunting to bring back a meal. I'm going to prepare that meal. You're going to go in as Esau, pretend to be Esau, eat with your dad, and have him bless you instead." I said, "But Mom, I'm nothing like Esau." She goes, "Go get his clothes on, put on his clothes." And I said, "But what if he touches my hands? Esau's the hairy guy. I mean, you hug that guy and you get a rug burn. I mean, that's how hairy he is." And so she says, "Listen," she gets some goat skins and she puts them on the back of my hands and on the back of my neck. And I put on his clothes, and she gets the food that the way he likes it, savory, kind of char, a little char from the fire. And I go in there. I go, "Hey, Dad, it's me, Esau." And he goes, "Doesn't sound like Esau." I say, yeah, it's me, Esau. I'm your son. I'm here with the food." He goes, "Come on in here. Let me touch you." He touches the goat skin, the goats, and he says, "Yeah, okay, you're my son." And she goes, "Hey, let me smell you." He grabs me and smells the scent of Esau. He says, "Are you really my son Esau?" And I just lied, flat out lied. I said, "Yes, I am." And right then he went on and gave me the family blessing. So I head to my tent. No sooner do I get back in my tent than Esau comes in with the food he's prepared. He went and hunted and cooked it up. And he went into my dad's tent. I just waited. And sure enough, I heard this blood-curdling, excruciatingly painful cry of anguish and sadness and hurt and rage. Oh, my. I made myself scarce. Suffice it to say, I skipped the family dinner that night. I wasn't going near there. Well, my mom comes to me and says, "Hey, Jacob, you need to get out of here because your brother is comforting his mind and heart with the thought of killing you." I said, "Great. Where did I go?" And they sent me back. I went back to Haran. I went back to the place my grandfather, Abraham, was from. I mean, isn't that kind of weird? I'm supposed to be in the land of promise, so now I'm heading back that way. And so on my trip back, one night I have a dream. I'm sound asleep, and all of a sudden, it was so real. It was like the stairway came down from the heavens to the earth right near my head, and angels were coming down it and going back up it and coming back down, going like in a circle of up and down the staircase. And I was wondering about that, and all of a sudden, God stood right beside me and said, "Listen, I am the God of your father, Isaac, and the God of your grandpa, Abraham, and I'm here to be your God, and I'm going to bless you, and I'm going to multiply your descendants like the sand of the seashore, and I'm going to give you the land that you're lying on tonight. This will be your land and your family's land forever and ever." So I woke up, and I went, "Wow, this is really weird." And so I said, "If that's really you, God, then I promise that if you keep me safe on my journey back to Haran, where I'll find some work with a relative, maybe find a wife and stay there till Esau simmers down and doesn't want to kill me anymore. If you'll keep me safe on that journey to and from, and I arrive back home and everything's cool and I'm at peace with my family, then you'll be my God." So I went on, made my way to Haran. I found my uncle Laban's house where I started working for him, watching the sheep. And after a while, Laban comes to me and says, "What do you want to be paid? Name your wages." And so I thought to myself, well, you got two daughters. Now, his oldest daughter is named Leah, and she had nice eyes. That's about all I can say. Now, Rachel, his younger daughter, the youngest, wow, she was beautiful. I mean, her face, oh, I've never seen a more beautiful face. Her body was really nice. And I mean, anytime I got around her, I just felt my knees were getting weak, you know? I said, "Listen, I'll serve you 7 years for the hand of your daughter Rachel in marriage." Now, I know the first person to speak in negotiations loses the deal. I should have let him speak first. 7 years, that's a long time, even for a beautiful woman. But I'm in love. I couldn't imagine my life without her. So he said, "Deal." So I start serving him. So I serve 7 years. And the day for the wedding comes, the banquet follows, and he tricked me. I wake up, and who's next to me? Not Rachel, Leah. That's where the phrase rude awakening comes from, by the way. I'm livid. I can't believe he's deceived me. So I storm out of there, demand an audience with Laban. I come in yelling, "What did you do? Why did you trick me?" And he says, "Hey, it's not our custom in these parts to give away the younger daughter in marriage before the older daughter. So you serve out your bridal week with her. Then we'll have your wedding to Rachel next week for another 7 years. What could I do? I was in love with the lady. So I said, okay. So I serve him for 7 more years. I have the two wives and their handmaids. And through them, I started having children. We started having a lot of sons. And so I finished my 7 years. I say, "It's time for me to go home." He says, "What can I do to make you stay here? I don't want you to leave. You're valuable to me. Name your wages again." So I said, "How about if I just receive every speckled and every spotted lamb or goat that's born to you in your herds and flocks from this moment on?" He said, "Okay." And guess what? God blessed me tremendously. Within 6 years, I was wealthier than Laban. I had flocks and herds and camels and donkeys, and it was time for me to go home. So God comes to me. I mean, God like makes it really known in a dream. He says, it's time for you to go home. So I kind of sneak out because Laban doesn't want to see me go. Why? I am his cash cow. I am like the geese that lays the golden egg. He knows that he's being blessed because of his association with me all those years. But we negotiate and we finally get away, and I'm heading back home. And so I got questions. Is Dad still alive? Is Mom still alive? Does Brother Esau still want to kill me? I don't know. So I send some of my men ahead of us, and they come back with dire news. Because I said, go find Esau and tell him I'm on my way back home to you guys. They come back and they say, Esau is on his way to meet you with 400 guys. Have you ever had that stomach where you just got to keep going to the bathroom? Like, because you're so nervous? Man, I was so afraid. That night I prayed hard. I said, God, you told me you'd take care of me. And you told me that my descendants would be like the sand on the seashore. How's that going to happen if my brother comes down and wipes us all out? Well, so the next day I get up and I go, you know what? I need to appease my brother for all the trickery that I did to him. So I send him hundreds, goats and sheep and cattle and camels and donkeys. And I have my servants go ahead of me so that the herds come one by one like a wave of gifts to him. And when he says, who are these from? Say, they're from your servant, Jacob. And maybe, just maybe, he'll settle down. He won't want to kill me. Well, that night, before we were to head in to meet him, I sent everyone and everything I had across the stream, and I stayed alone by myself to gather my thoughts. And guess what? No sooner was I alone than this guy, this man appears out of nowhere and starts to wrestle me, like death match wrestling. I mean, I feel like I'm going to die, but I fight him, and I fight him, and I fight him. I mean, this goes on for minutes and hours, and I'm exhausted. I think I'm going to like have a heart attack. And the guy won't stop, and he won't stop. But I'll tell you what, I was not going to give up. I was not going to run, because you know what I discovered? I realized this is God wrestling me. This is God. And I wasn't going to let go. So I said to him, I said, hey, listen, I'm not going to let go of you until you bless me, God. You know that deal we made? You're supposed to bless me. I want to make sure you're the one going to bless me. And he goes, hey, listen, I am going to bless you. I'm changing your name. Your new name is Israel. That means you have wrestled with men and with God, and you have prevailed. And during that time, he says, hey, I started noticing the sun was coming up. And that's what prompted me, actually. He said, hey, let go of me. And that's when I said, no. Like he couldn't be seen in the daylight. And all of a sudden, he touched me. After all this wrestling, he touched me with his finger in my hip, and it went out. It just wrenched. That's why I knew it was God. And ever since then, I've been walking with a limp the rest of my years, because God touched me and met me there. So I go across the stream, and we start heading towards Esau, and I'm prepared to meet my doom. And guess what? He sees me, and from a distance, he runs to me, and he's not mad. He's excited and full of joy. And he grabs a hold of me, and he hugs me. And he says, I love you. Why'd you send all these gifts? I don't need all these gifts. I just want to see you. It was so mind-boggling that he was wanting to have a relationship with me. So we reminisced for a while, and then he went his way. He blessed me. I blessed him. I went back to the place where God first met me on that journey because I wanted to honor God and say, God, you have been faithful to me. And so I made that place a holy place. I built an altar to God, and I called it Bethel. Bethel, which means house of God. And I got to tell you, folks, I marvel at how God is so good to me. I mean, when he wrestled with me face to face, toe to toe, nose to nose that night, and he blessed me, and then he allowed me to have a good relationship with my brother Esau, I said, God, you are no longer just my grandpa's God or my dad's God. You are now my God. You are El Elohi. El Elohi Israel. The God of Israel. And I'm telling you this morning, if you will wrestle with God personally, if you'll wrestle with him, he wants to wrestle with you. He wants to get close to you. If you'll do that, he can become your God too.
My name is Joseph. I'm the oldest son of Rachel, my father's favorite wife, and the grandson of Isaac and the great-grandson of Abraham. And as you've heard this morning from Abraham and from Jacob, you know, God's paid special visits and attention to them a lot. And it's, in my opinion, it's a lot easier to follow God when he visits you, gives you visions and dreams, and is always telling you he's going to bless you and be with you and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's a lot easier when God does that. But when your life is hard and you never hear from God and you don't get visits and dreams and promise of blessings and all that, it's much harder to follow him. And this is my story. Like I said, I was the oldest son of Rachel, my father's favorite wife. And, of course, that means that then I was Dad's favorite son. Now, I don't really remember what my mother looked like because she died when I was very young in childbirth, giving birth to my younger brother, Benjamin. But people say that I look just like her, and I remind Dad of her a lot. And so that made him dote on me and spoil me, and it created a huge sense of entitlement in me, and it just about killed me. So because I'm this favored son, Dad put me in charge of all of my brothers. They're grown men, shepherds, and he makes me their supervisor. He says, I want you to go out and check on them regularly, bring back reports, and let me know how they're doing. Whoa. Yeah, I can do that. I'll be happy to report on my older brothers. I'm going to keep them in line. And if I have to stretch the truth every now and then to maintain Dad's favor on me and not on them, I'm not above that. So my brothers didn't like me very much because of that. And then there was also the fact that Dad kind of made me this special robe you might have seen. I mean, look at this thing. You could see this a mile away. And I made sure that those brothers saw me in that robe all the time. One of those noble robes, you know, down to the ankles, down to my handcuffs, special threads. Man, I strutted around in that thing and they hated me all the more. And then there was the little fact of the dreams. I didn't tell you about the dreams? Yeah, I have this gift of dream interpretation. And when I was young, I had a couple dreams one night and I woke up in the morning and told my family. I told him, I said, hey, last night I dreamed that we were out gathering the wheat and binding it into those big sheaves, and all of your sheaves bowed down to me. Guess what that means? And then I dreamed that the sun, moon, and stars were you guys, and you all bowed down to me too. So I guess you're going to have to bow down to me because I'm the favored son. Well, Dad wasn't very happy with me that I kind of relayed those dreams that way, but my brothers hated me for it. But what were they going to do? Kill me? Please. They wouldn't dream. Dad was so rich, they wanted his inheritance. They wouldn't lay a finger on me if they did anything to me. He would for sure just thrash into them. So I wasn't worried. So one day Dad says, hey, go check on your brothers. So they're a 2 days' journey away. So I'm out walking around in my robe looking for them, and I see them. And when I arrive, of course, they saw me coming a mile away because of my Technicolor dream coat. And they pounce on me and begin to beat me. They rip my robe from me, throw me into a pit without any water, and they sit down to eat lunch and start talking about how they're going to kill me. Slowly, with razor blades, quick, through the heart, I was terrified. Well, my older brother Reuben talked them out of killing me. And when he went away, my other brother Judah says, hey, let's profit from this little escapade we've had and sell them to these slavers that are coming by over here. So that's what they did, and they sold me to these slavers who were on their way to Egypt to trade goods. So now I find myself on a camel traveling to Egypt thinking, God, what is going on? You gave me dreams where I was going to be the one that everybody bowed down to. But now I'm a slave and I have to bow down to everybody else. How does that work? That's kind of backwards, God. This doesn't make sense. And I had heard all the stories from my father, Jacob, and Abraham, and how God met them, and, oh, I'm going to bless you and make you like the sand of the sea and the stars in the sky and increase you and multiply you and blah, blah, blah. Every time God does that, they get richer, they get more powerful, they get more important. And how does that jive with my experience? Slave. I was crushed. So I find myself sold to a man named Potiphar, who happened to be the commander-in-chief of all the armed forces of Egypt, which in a way is a blessing because of his connections and how wealthy his household was. But a slave in a rich house is still a slave. I worked hard, though. I dedicated myself, tried to be the best slave I could be. And you know what? God's blessing began to fall on me. And everything I did succeeded, and the household began to experience more and more success. And I was moved from working out in the fields to coming inside the house. And everything I did in the house began to profit. And more goods the house was added to in terms of money and prestige and prominence. And Potiphar recognized that God's blessing was on me and was being extended to him. He made me in charge of everything in his house. There wasn't a single thing that happened in that house that wasn't as a result of my direction and command. And he experienced incredible blessing. The only thing Potiphar worried about was whether he was going to eat pizza or steak for dinner. Tough life, right? Well, all of this success had a negative consequence too, because Potiphar's wife began to cast her eyes on me in kind of a creepy way. Like, she'd undress me, right? I mean, yeah, I was probably good looking because my mom was supposed to be really good looking, but she gave me the creeps. So one day I'm in the house and she just comes up to me and she says, "Sex now, slave." I was like, "Excuse me?" I mean, I was like, "Excuse me?" Right? Like, what are you talking about? How could I do this thing to God? That's a great wickedness. How could I do this thing to Potiphar and betray his trust like that? So day after day began a campaign of seduction where she tried to get me to sleep with her. Alluring clothing, special scents. Come, lie with me. Nobody will know. It'll just be our little secret. Just one time. Come on, you can do it. No, I said. I consistently refused her advances. And finally, one day, she got desperate. I'm in the house, and nobody else is there. And she rips my robe from me. I know, me and robes got a thing. They get ripped off. What can I do? I didn't even stick around. I ran out of, in my underwear outside. I didn't care what people thought about me. And she, in her anger, cries rape and stirs up the men of the household and tells them this Hebrew is trying to take advantage of me. And when Potiphar came home for dinner that night, she told him that I had tried to force her. And boy, was he angry. He didn't even want to hear my side of the story. He just threw me in prison. So I went from favored son to slave to prisoner. Thanks, God. This really is helping people bow down to me. But you know what? While I was in prison, I just continued to work hard, and God's blessing kept falling on me. Everything I did just kept succeeding, and pretty soon I was put in charge of the whole entire prison. I could have walked out if I wanted to, but I didn't. I bided my time, and suddenly one day, two of Pharaoh's officials were put inside the prison because they did some offense that he didn't like. And so they were there for a while, and I'm checking on the prisoners, and one day these two guys wake up, and they got that look on their face, that like ashen look, like I've had a terrible morning, I need my coffee now, don't talk to me until I get my coffee. You know that look? They looked like that, only 10 times worse. I said, "Guys, what's the matter?" They said, "We've had these incredible dreams, and nobody can interpret them." I said, "Well, don't interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So they told me what their dreams were, and I said, "Okay, guys, here's what it means. One of you is going to be restored to your position of prominence, and one of you will be retired from your position of prominence with extreme prejudice, if you know what I mean." So I told the one who would be restored, "Hey, please remember me when you get back to Pharaoh's court, because I'm here unjustly." Well, he didn't remember me. 2 years went by while I was still in prison, running the prison. And then one day, guards come in. They said, "You need to bathe now, shave now, get a fresh robe on. You're going to meet Pharaoh." Okay. I get presented before Pharaoh, and I'm like, "What's going on?" He said, "I've heard that you can interpret dreams." I said, "Interpretation isn't in me. Interpretations belong to God alone, and he will give you a favorable interpretation." So I told Pharaoh, after hearing his dreams, that what they meant was that there would be 7 years of incredible blessing, bumper crops, and 7 years of extreme famine. And if he was wise, he would appoint somebody to be in charge of those 7 years of plenty, to save and take a portion of the grain to set aside for those 7 years of famine, because it was going to be so hard. And to my surprise, Pharaoh put me in charge of all of Egypt. In a heartbeat, I was suddenly the second most powerful man in all of Egypt. Wow. So, fast forward 9 years. We go through the 7 years of plenty and 2 years of famine. And my brothers come into the court. Because the famine was so severe that it actually affected their land where they were. And Dad had sent them to buy grain from me. And they don't recognize me. I have the power. So I decided to test them to see what their character was. And I kind of told my officials, hey, I want you to do some bribing, put some gold in their sacks. Let's hold one of the brothers hostage. Let's really put them to the test and see what kind of blackness comes out of their hearts. Are they going to, you know, offer up another brother? They didn't do any of that. They showed incredible humbleness. And I was amazed. And after kind of several tests like this, I finally couldn't contain myself anymore. And when they were before me one day, I just broke down in tears. I told everybody to get out, and I went down and revealed myself to my brother and said, it's me. It's Joseph. Well, the look on their face was fear and surprise. Because this was the brother that they had sold into slavery and never expected to see again. And now he's the functional ruler of Egypt, and he has the power to crush them. I could see it on their face. And I said to them, hey, don't fear. Relax. I forgive you. Don't you know that what you intended for evil, God has intended for good? He's had a plan all along to preserve the family because he knew this famine was coming and he wants to protect us and bless us because we're the chosen people who have the blessing that's going to bless the whole world through us. What you intended for evil, God intended for good. And as I look back through the history of my family, through Abraham and through Isaac and through Jacob, I see over and over again good things and bad things, but always behind it is God's intention for good. He has a master plan. And as I look now forward into the future, I know that this was because out of us would come the ultimate blessing, Jesus. What we oftentimes think of as terrible, wicked, evil things, God is orchestrating everything for our great good. And that is an amazing thing. Thank you.